The name of our podcast, Tech Sequences, is really a mashup of two words, technology and consequences. We are fascinated by the consequences, intended or unintended, of the internet and related technologies for the way we live, play, and work. We are your hosts, Leslie Daigle and Alexa Rod. We started our careers at the dawn of the internet and have been friends, colleagues, and comrades in arms for the better part of 20 years. In this podcast, we examine the impact internet-related technologies have made or may make in our lives. My name is Alexa Rod.
And I'm Leslie Daigle. In this episode, we will be looking at contact tracing apps in the context of COVID-19. Are they, in fact, a fair bargain for the public? Many countries consider contact tracing part of a multi-pronged approach in fighting COVID-19 pandemic. In fact, it has been a pillar of communicable disease control for public health. Contact tracing involves working backward from infected cases to identify people who may have been exposed to the disease so that they can be tested, isolated, and, hopefully, treated. Traditional contact tracing is a labor-intensive process of interviews and detailed detective work and coordinated communication. But is there a better, faster, cheaper solution? Can technology come to our aid? And if so, what are the consequences? Governments are increasingly working on or have launched contact tracing apps. MIT Technology Review is currently tracking 29 such contact tracing apps initiated or supported by governments across the globe. However, privacy advocates have not fully bought in.
Our guest today is Dr. Konstantinos Komaitis. He is the Senior Director, Policy, Strategy, and Development at the Internet Society and is based in Geneva. Konstantinos provides analysis and strategic advice in support of the Internet Society's policy, advocacy, and mission, including the promotion of the open development, evolution, and use of the Internet for the benefit of all people throughout the world. Konstantinos leads policy development and coordination on issues relating to the digital economy, including access and competition, intellectual property, technology, trade, and Internet governance. Konstantinos joined the Internet Society after working as a senior lecturer at the University of Strathclyde in Glasgow, UK. He has a bachelor's degree in law from the University of Thessaloniki in Greece. He holds two master's degrees, respectively, in international and European law and in information technology and telecommunications law. He holds a doctorate and is the author of the book, The Current State of Domain Regulation. He is also an arbiter for the Czech Arbitration Court, as well as a TEDx speaker. Welcome, Konstantinos.
Thank you very much. Hello. Nice to be with you.
Well, we are thrilled to have you. So this is a really topical issue. There are, as Leslie mentioned, there are lots of contact tracing apps that have found their way into the news and into the public dialogue. When we were preparing for this episode, you pointed out an interesting report from the Tony Blair Institute for Global Change. In that report, the Institute argues that a dramatic increase in technological surveillance is a price worth paying to fight COVID-19. So are we facing a dilemma of safeguarding public health or safeguarding our privacy, or is that just too far of a simplistic approach?
So I think that we are presented this dilemma for sure. Governments, as they're trying to cope with COVID-19 and they're trying to grasp what exactly this means, inevitably they are putting forward various propositions, but some of those propositions, some of those dilemmas are a little bit artificial, at least from where I am sitting. Currently, most of the governments are saying to their citizens, it is your public health versus privacy. And in many ways, a lot of those citizens, especially the ones that, you know, they're a little bit older, they're not very much exposed to technology, or they're coming from countries where trust in governments and governance is very different, will inevitably opt for the public health dilemma. However, we have seen as we're getting to grips with COVID, that you can actually do technology that is not centralized. Therefore, you do not need to give a lot up of your privacy, and it doesn't necessarily lead to surveillance.
So if there are centralized and decentralized approaches, what you are saying is we can go for a decentralized approach. Now, what are the the safeguards that will prevent it from going from centralized, from a decentralized approach to a centralized approach. Many times, the example that is given in terms of, you know, what could potentially happen and for data to be misused is the Cambridge Analytica. So can you also talk about why that example is used and the potential consequences of something like a COVID-19 tracing app? What are the worst potential consequences that could happen?
Well, in many ways, Cambridge Analytica was a turning point for all of us, for the whole entire world, and especially for privacy advocates, because then we realized exactly what can happen with the manipulation of data. Prior to Cambridge Analytica, we all knew that big platforms and technology companies are using our data for mainly advertising purposes. Cambridge Analytica was a game changer because it demonstrated the ability actually to, through that data, to change government structures, to influence the way democracies run. So in many ways, this made us think, well, this made us stop and think, hold on, should we be giving so easily our data to these technology companies? And what exactly is the price that we ultimately will pay? So in many ways, this is exactly what's happening in COVID-19. And there is this cloud of public health on top of it that creates, these are very scary times, right? We do not know what's going to happen and we want to find a solution. And so far, one of the lessons that we're learning is that this virus has a lot of unknowns. So when we hear that contact tracing applications and technology can actually accelerate and help us find those solutions, then we have the tendency of forgetting a little bit, you know, those privacy concerns and buying into this whole idea. This is the first thing. The second thing is that, generally speaking, decentralization has those unique features that allows it to perform a little bit better. And of course, there are always trade-offs, right? However, one of those unique features is that there is no single point of failure within decentralized systems. Therefore, it is, in terms of security and resiliency, things are work much better in a decentralized environment. Centralized environments have the tendency of being more prone to security vulnerabilities and being more easily hacked. And again, we do not know how any of that data is going to be used, because even the governments that insist on centralized systems of contact tracing apps, they're not informing their citizens what exactly they want to do with the data that they will be collecting.
So it strikes me that in order to understand whether or not, you know, what the trade-off is, there's sort of two key questions. One is, will contact tracing actually work and help improve the situation? And two is, how long is this contact tracing for, and how long does the data, you know, linger and get used for whatever purposes? But before we even go there, I think that maybe we ought to sort of explore a little bit of, if you don't do this with an app, what is the alternative? Because contact tracing has already been an important part of dealing with the pandemic across the globe. I mean, countries that have been successful in corralling the outbreak have been focused on tracing the contacts of people who have come down with the illness. And they do that by, you know, foot power. They do that by saying, who were you in contact with in the last 3 days or whatever? Give us their names and numbers and we will find them and we will tell them that they need to self-isolate, so on and so forth. That's the part that is incredibly laborious, also not necessarily very effective. Prior to, you know, earlier this year, depending the exact date, depending on where you live in the world, prior to earlier this year, you probably wouldn't think twice about who did I see in the last 24, 48 hours. Whereas since people have been on lockdown, that number has gotten considerably smaller and potentially everyone's a lot more sensitive to it. But to say, you know, here are the five people that I've seen, you know, been in contact with in the last 48 hours, you know, please ring them up and see who they've been in contact with, so on and so forth, is laborious. So again, can these contact tracing apps actually work? And what is the potential for the data lasting beyond the lifespan of this pandemic?
So I think that you've raised a couple of very important points there. The first one is, you know, let's focus a little bit on this idea of contact tracing, right? This is not a new thing. If you go back in the history, the concept of contact tracing was born in the late 18th century, essentially, when a doctor in England started interviewing and isolating local families to understand how smallpox was spreading at the time, right? And then, of course, it was used in different kinds of contagions, from sexually transmitted diseases to the 2003 SARS outbreak to the 2009 swine flu. Back then, we didn't even have that debate about contact tracing apps. So we already have a system that somehow worked, and it really worked because, you know, you can never replace at the end of the day this human interaction. Imagine calling someone and telling them that they are potentially have COVID, how they would react, right? If you have a contact tracing app on your phone, you just get a message and then that person needs to deal with it alone. However, if you have someone on the other line that puts a little bit things into perspective, it's a completely different way of dealing with things. Having said that, the world in 2020 is very much different, of course, than the 18th century or 2009. to say the least. So this is where technology can actually help. But again, technology should not be replacing, should not be seen as a replacement of the traditional methods. It should be seen as a complementary way to actually help some of those things that some of the limitations that traditional contact tracing is having. So, and that's where perhaps the trade-offs do not appear as significant when you see them as a combination, right? Because, for instance, we talked a little before about decentralized contact tracing apps. They have huge limitations. Let's be fair. Centralized contract tracing apps are much better because they gather the data and they're able to assist public health authorities and epidemiologists in order to understand better the disease. In a decentralized system, you cannot do that. However, if you combine the decentralized system with traditional means of contact tracing, that can be much easier achieved. And then the other point you've raised, Leslie, and you're absolutely right, no one is really telling us how long we are supposed to be using those apps. No one is really telling us their efficacy or their efficiency, for that matter. They're just saying, download them and trust us that we are going to get there eventually, and we're going to give you the treatment, the vaccine, we're going to contain this, we're going to do all the things that you're hoping. But it is this trust that we are being asked to place on our governments and our public health authorities. And to an extent we should, but also because we live in 2020 and we have seen how democracies are actually treating their citizens over the past few years, I think this trust is a little bit broken, and asking citizens to go back to it is a huge leap of faith.
You know, you're right in that a lot of the states are actually prioritizing doing the manual contact tracing. There are Utah, North Dakota, and South Dakota that have implemented the contact tracing app, and North Dakota, I believe, only has about 4% penetration. But going to the issue of surveillance and some of the problems that you raised, there's some contact tracing apps like Singapore's Trace Together, where they claim that they do not use user location data so that they could address this idea of, or the concerns about location privacy. But all of these contact tracing apps in some way collect some sort of proximity and duration, because they have to by using Bluetooth and other sensors. Other sensors, I mean sensors that are embedded into the phone. So, you know, a user's relative distance, time, and duration is important to figure out how much of a contact or exposure you potentially had. So given that these things could be combined to get to the whole location issue, which was the problem of concern in the first place, do we have or should we have some, you know, policy or regulatory safeguards to prevent against cross-tabulating the data, especially as you mentioned that there is no you know, we don't have any idea of how long these things will actually be in place.
So I don't think that we need special regulation for these kind of apps, to be fair with you. I am hoping that existing privacy regulation will be able to capture a lot of those things that we are currently seeing. But, you know, even there, even in places where we actually see that there are strong forms of privacy regulation, we actually see that in the name of public safety and in the name of public health, those regulations are becoming a little bit redundant, or they seem to be forgotten. And let me give you an example. A couple of years ago, Europe not only passed, but it set a global standard on the privacy regulation and data protection through the General Data Protection Regulation, GDPR, that a lot of people, individuals and companies, are still going through the pain of trying to comply with its very, very high standards of privacy. We have that in Europe, and Europe believes very strongly in privacy, and we are seeing reports coming out from France where it is literally asking Google and Apple, that have collaborated to create this decentralized app, to actually centralize it because they believe that this is going to be far better. This is a country that has championed privacy regulations in Europe. And right now, we are seeing them actually changing, making this 180 degrees sort of change and moving towards a very centralized system that raises significant questions about privacy, can easily be used for surveillance. And let's be fair, it can easily also be hacked. It has security flaws and all that comes with the decentralization system. So I don't think the solution is a new regulation. I think the solution is respecting the existing regulations.
Right. So part of it is, part of the challenge here is to try to implement this really quickly where there isn't the opportunity to properly review the implications and ramifications. But I mean, it potentially is a sort of a vote of sympathy for the push towards centralization. Part of the challenge here is the same kind of thing as we heard around, you know, reports prior to the 9/11 catastrophe, terrorist attacks in the US, where part of the challenge was the decentralized nature of intelligence gathering globally and particularly in different departments in the US meant that while all the indicators may have been available, they weren't brought together to form a picture to say there is a clear and present danger against which you should protect yourself. So in the same light, you could say that there are many pieces of contact tracing information that might be useful, and to keep them completely separate might lead us to not have a proper and full picture. And the question on the table seems to be whether the proper and full picture is really, you know, in the interest of people who ought to be warned that they may have been exposed, or if the proper and full picture is somehow more nefarious.
Yes, because decentralization, you know, there is a tiny detail in decentralization that escapes everyone. Decentralization cannot work unless you collaborate. And there is hardly any collaboration really happening currently. I am seeing it being located in Europe. The European Union is actually not collaborating. And this is a set of countries that for a long, long time, they have created a regime based purely on collaboration. Needless to say, what is happening globally in the world, right? I mean, we are seeing, for instance, how currently the whole fights that are happening in the context of the WHO, how countries, you know, are fighting what the role of each country is. So instead of actually sitting down and collaborating and exchanging information and using, you know, decentralization to their advantage, they see it as their nemesis in many, many ways, and they're fighting against it. And so we're going back to these isolated solutions that are simply not going to work because this is a global issue with global implications.
You and I wrote a paper once about solving wicked hard problems through collaboration, and yep, specifically how collaboration helped countries in Africa solve their challenges with Ebola.
That's exactly right. This is exactly right. And many of those challenges and many of those systems that were used back then were very highly decentralized. right? They were brought from all over the world. They were scientists from all over the world that they sat down and they were trying to figure out. So this idea that we need to sit down and exchange information needs to happen. And it goes back to the original question, right? We are not being told that actually it is the lack of collaboration that creates a lot of those gaps that you guys are seeing currently. We are being told, no, you need to trust us to do the right thing because we believe or we know that we have the answers. And I don't think that this is the case or that it is a very fair game, especially to the people that are currently sitting in their homes and looking at what's happening around them in awe.
So speaking of collaboration, Google and Apple are collaborating. In fact, they mentioned as of April 10th that they are building a broader Bluetooth-based contact tracing platform to build this functionality into their own respective Apple and Android platform. So what we're seeing is that the tech giants are collaborating, but the governments are not. Is that a good thing that these tech giants are collaborating in an area when most of the time previously there was intense competition?
I think that it's ironic for sure. I'm not sure whether it is a good or bad thing. It looks like it is certainly, it appears to be offering a much better privacy-friendly solution currently to the mess that we're experiencing. Whether it is actually good or bad, I think it's too early to tell. But, you know, the thinking behind it, and let's be fair, right? I mean, especially in the case of Apple, privacy is part of their business model. So they're doing something that they have been doing, and it's actually a very good PR mechanism for them, right? So they're not necessarily doing it out of the goodness of their hearts. But it is very interesting that we're seeing two huge technology giants that normally are competing coming together and saying, you know what? We can perhaps do something here. And what they're doing is that essentially they're creating a system that delegates the development of actual contact tracing apps to health authorities, right? So they're creating the API that allows this cross functionality. And they sat down and they said, okay, in order to be able to do that, and it goes back to the point of collaboration, in order for people to force people to collaborate, the system that we come up with needs to be ingenious with three main features, right? It needs to be decentralized. It needs to provide automatic notifications, and it needs to be interoperable. So essentially what they're doing is something that we have not managed to do in the development of the internet, right? I mean, I read somewhere that it was like, and they were saying, think of it as a way to get notifications about a new TikTok video, even if you're using Instagram. And This is quite huge, right? Quite significant, because COVID does not understand borders. So Even if you're using the most efficient and the best privacy respectful app in one state, let's take the United States, for instance, yeah, you can travel out of that state. And if your app is not interoperable between states, then you are having information that to the next state are going to be completely useless. So there seem to be filling a gap in some interesting ways. But again, whether this is good or bad, I think only time will tell. Once this is over and we start reviewing some of those things, we should be able to go back and see the reality of whether they worked or not.
So to take advantage of the fact that they've provided this sort of seamless platform, should we have the authorities actually develop the app so that we do have this interoperability? As you mentioned, if I move from, you know, Utah to South Dakota or New York to New Jersey, I should be able to still have good information about who I may have contaminated. Or do we leave it up to, you know, individual companies to actually develop this as sort of a free market?
I think that, you know, the whole concept of free market, especially from where I'm sitting, is a little bit collapsing. So it needs to be some sort of a hybrid system that allows, again, more interaction and collaboration between public authorities and perhaps the companies, right? Many public authorities, I am thinking of public authorities in Greece, do not have the means, they don't have the infrastructure to build those apps. However, they have the scientific knowledge. So, you know, I would feel extremely uncomfortable if I were to depend that a private company has the scientific knowledge to provide me with information about COVID. And I would feel equally uncomfortable if I were to depend on a public health authority, creating the infrastructure and using the infrastructure to be able and provide a top-notch app that allows me to use it without the fear of privacy or surveillance or all those things. So I think we should be looking more towards hybrid systems rather than individual companies or public authorities doing what they're doing.
So my takeaway from all of this discussion really is that we do need contact tracing apps of some description in order to help with the scale of challenge that we have at the moment. That collaboration is key both to creating those systems, those apps, and also to ensuring that that privacy laws are respected, and that the onward overall best interests of people are respected over time.
Yes, and I think I would add to that those contact trace, we need to understand that those contact tracing apps are essentially enhancements and not replacements for traditional contact tracing, and that they need to come with certain features. They need to be voluntary, they need to be decentralized, they need to be limited in scope and time, they need to be anonymized, and we need to figure out a framework of transparency and accountability at the same time that allow us to do those fixes, because we shouldn't be expecting to get things right, because I think I've said it before, there are so many unknowns about this virus. So we need to be able, they need to be agile and flexible in order to adapt to how the virus changes and how contamination actually happens, because we've only seen the first wave. And if we look at, if we trace the history of pandemics, there's going to be a second wave. And in many cases, that second wave might be more deadly than the first one. So we need to be prepared.
Yeah. So I think some of the things...
We need to go out on a higher note than that.
Well, I was going to ask, what are some of the things you just mentioned are really good advice to citizens to demand of their public officials and public health officials to have these safeguards. What is there any other advice that you would give to the average user or average citizen when they're looking at the decision to download a contact tracing app?
I think that asking those questions, especially the privacy question, is a must. Mm-hmm. But at the same time, working with public authorities and working with the contact tracers and working, you know, collaborate essentially, right? Be part of the conversation instead of saying, of being a passive observer of what is happening and just take and use what is given to you without questioning it.
Be an informed citizen.
Be an informed citizen, absolutely.
Great advice. Well, Konstantinos, thank you so much. This was a great, great episode to have you on, and very topical.
Thank you so very much for having me.
Thanks for listening to this TechSequences podcast. We are Leslie Daigle and Alexa Rod. You can reach us by email, techsequences@techsequences.org. We'd love to hear from you to know what you thought about this episode or ideas for future episodes. TechSequences, follow us on Twitter and Facebook, and subscribe through your favorite podcasting service.